Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Coach Jen, also from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to the Horses in the Morning Show on the Horse Radio Network for December 17th, 2012, episode 553. This episode is brought to you by Omega Alpha Equine and Good Morning Horse World.
Well, it's Monday morning, everybody, and we bring you the holiday hits that Jamie so loves, like this one.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer, walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe.
And another Jennings favorite.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. Don't want a doll, no dinky tinker toy.
And who could forget Jamie's all-time favorite Christmas song?
Jingity jing, it's Dominic the donkey. Jingity jing, the Italian Christmas donkey.
Happy Monday, everybody.
La 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 la.
Well, Jennifer, I think it's interesting that Jamie decided to take a long weekend this week and go away with her hubby because she knew I was going to play that this morning. I think
that may have been a factor. Yeah,
I think that was why she did it. But she'll be back on Wednesday. She did decide to take a long week. Her husband was taking her away this weekend. I'm sure we'll hear all about it on Wednesday. I just want to say before we get started with the show today, with all the frivolity, is our thoughts and prayers are go out to everyone obviously affected by the tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut. You know, it's tough on days like this for us to come in here and do an entertaining, funny, and informational show. With that hanging over our heads, but we know it is why you tune in here to this show, is to escape from reality for a few hours every week and hear about the addiction that we all have to horses, and maybe we get a few chuckles along the way. And, you know, I also know that 99.9% of the people in this world are good people, are caring people. So we're going to focus on them like we always do and try to give you a positive, entertaining break from reality this morning. You know, it's one of those things that we talked about and we're committed to doing, is still providing you the entertainment and your little horsey escape here for a couple hours each week. So our prayers are out to everybody, to all the families and everybody involved. But we have to continue on, and we're going to do that today. So Jennifer, what do we have coming up on today's show?
On today's Omega Alpha Monday edition, we are going collegiate this morning with the executive director of the Intercollegiate Horse Show Association, Bob Cachone, who will be joining us for a mid-semester chat. And for the extremists in you, we have scoured the interweb and found the fellow responsible for bringing many of those extreme mountain trail videos that we all enjoy on YouTube. That would be Mark Bolender. And, of course, it's Monday, and it wouldn't be complete without Wiley, the voice of Horse Nation, to set the laugh tone for the week. And celebrate responsibly, folks. It's National Maple Syrup Day. May I recommend a romantic movie, hot apple pie a la mode, and a sultry drizzle of maple syrup on top.
Well, there you go. And I'm glad we're doing the education thing today, because I certainly need some. That's not...
Yes, you do.
Any question there? Well, my Daily Winnie today goes out to Natalie. She made a comment on our Horses in the Morning website, and she said, I love your show. I've been listening to your show for about 2 years now, and I have an automatic sync, so when my MP3 player is plugged into the computer, it automatically puts your newest show on my player. I hope you never stop making these shows. They are very entertaining and keep me posted on all the news in the horse world. Thanks, guys. Well, thank you, Natalie. We appreciate all of our listeners, and we appreciate you. And congratulations, you figured out how to do the MP3 player thing. Actually, about 60% of our listeners now listen through downloads of through iTunes or one of the other services and listen while they're cleaning stalls or driving or doing other things. So that number has been going up and up, and I predict in another year probably about 75% of our listeners will listen that way, and the other 25% will listen on a website around the Internet. We also want to thank all of our affiliates. If you have a website and you would like to allow people on your website to hear Horses in the Morning, you can do that. There's a simple player that you can put on your website, and it allows people to click on it. The player opens in a different window, and they can actually listen to our show, the recorded versions or the live version. They can listen to right on your website while surfing around looking at other things on your site. So if you want to do that, just go to horsesinthemorning.com, and you'll see an affiliate link at the top that has all the information, and it's a very simple code, just like putting a YouTube video on your website. So it's very simple to do. Let us know if you do, and we'll have you on the show to say thank you. All right, it's your turn.
My daily winning goes out to all of the volunteers around the country who put up with blisters and splinters and poison ivy and insect bites and encounters with various poisonous animals to maintain the equestrian trails that I got to use this weekend, and many other folks did too. Were it not for the dedicated groups, many or most likely most of the trails around the equestrian world would not be here for us to enjoy. So volunteer if you can and help maintain those trails. And like, if you are like Glenn and have been banned from the use of power tools and sharp hand tools, think about having a bake sale to help raise a little money.
You had a great ride. You were down Saturday. You went down with our sister-in-law, Pam, and you took the quarter horses out to the Florida Greenway, which we've talked about before, which is that strip of land, it's a linear park that goes from the Gulf of Mexico all the way across to the Atlantic Ocean and comes right here through Ocala. But we tried a different trailhead this time. You guys got to go in. There were no bike trails there, so my brother and I went out and did the roads. But you guys got to go into some pretty exotic country, didn't you?
It was really cool. Let me first say that I think Beaker is either in love with his trail mate, Ayla, or he really likes going for trail rides, because as soon as he hears the truck coming, you can hear it from quite a distance here in the neighborhood. You can hear that diesel driving down the road about 10 minutes out. He starts to whinny, and he keeps whinnying until the truck gets here. What's the deal? But, yeah, we took the red trail, which, according to the description at the trailhead, they had these cute little posters up. It is the extreme trail for experienced riders only. And it was pretty awesome. It was up and down and back and forth through what was the actual canal. So it's really neat. You have these sections where you go down a cliff that's about, oh, I'd say about 40 feet long. And it has to have steps because it's so steep. So you jump down these little steps, each step being about a foot high. And you do about a dozen of them right in a row. And then you do a little switch back and straight back up again. So it was a pretty awesome ride. The horses were bushed when we were finished.
Yeah, you guys, we're going to go out for 2 hours, got back in 1 hour. And the horses were just sweaty.
They were all in.
It's hard to believe. Poor Beaker still has his winter coat. We're going to have to clip him, we determined, because he's used to having his winter coat from up north, first year in Florida. So he's a little sweaty on the 80-degree days out riding.
Yeah, he was all in. And we were happy that the trail was shorter than we thought it was, because the trail maps don't give you distances. It will tell you if you go in a straight line from one trailhead to the next that it's 12 miles. But if you take any of the looping trails, there's no distances. So all you have is sort of a pseudo map to look at. And you really don't know if it's going to take you an hour or a day to go around a given trail. So we just picked that one because it had a loop, and we said, see you guys. Glenn insisted that we take a GPS along, water, wet, dry matches,
Well, the one thing I know about you and Pam is you are directionally challenged. You wouldn't be able to tell north from south if you're in the middle of the woods if your life depended on it. So, you guys have a tough time with the GPS finding stuff.
That's because you have to stay on the roads.
Let me not remind you of the few times that a couple of the times you went out to horse shows with some of your students and got there too late because you were lost. So let's not go there, Jennifer. There's been a few of those times. Well, the last really bad ads for the year.
No apple pie a la mode for you.
The last really bad ads for the year are going to be this Friday, and then on the 31st we will have the best of really bad ads episode. So get your ads in if you'd like to get one more shot at it. What are we giving away this week, Jennifer?
We are giving away a pair of Hydro T hose nozzles. Hook it to the end of your hose, and you have instant water massage.
So the same as last week. We got a couple more of those that we're giving away this week, and whatever else we can dig out of your office there that's been sent to us all year. Maybe we'll give away some of that stuff too.
Can it clean out the swag vault?
Yeah, we'll clean out the swag vault. So send your ads in, get them to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. And then, as I said, on the 31st, we're going to do a best of really bad ads. Jennifer's been keeping track of which ones she really liked throughout the year. So we'll put all those together into a best of show on the 31st for you. We've had a couple requests for that, so we'll be glad to do that for you. And if you have favorites from the really bad ads, if you have a Friday that you really liked, send them in an email to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Put the date down, if you can, the date or episode number. That'll help her out. So if you do have a favorite, please include them in there, and we'll try and get them into that show. A couple other things here before we go on. We have a lot of guests today, and Jennifer, I know you have to get the one on, so you go ahead and do that now. Tammy Sarant is a host here on the Horse Radio Network. She's a host of the Western Radio Show, and her friends are putting together a fundraiser for her. As most of you know, because we've had her on the air here at Horses in the Morning a couple of times talking about it, she was in an accident with a drunk driver, an illegal alien drunk driver, actually, so didn't have insurance and that kind of thing. And Tammy was in an accident. The drunk driver hit him. T-boned him, basically. And what happened was Tammy's had a very tough year. She's had recurring problems from the accident with her head, actually, and her brain. So they are going to be doing brain surgery here in January to try and alleviate some of the problems that she's been having. But she does not have insurance. And, as I said, the auto insurance only went so far because of the situation. So we're doing a fundraiser to help Tammy out, pay her medical bills. It's a very expensive surgery that she's having on her head. So what they're looking for right now, our friends, is looking for auction items, things that they can auction off for her benefit to help raise money to help pay her medical bills. So if you have something, if you own a business or you have something that you could donate to the auction and then send out to the winner of the auction, we would really appreciate your help. You can send those auction items to Glenn at horseradionetwork.com. That's Glenn with two N's at horseradionetwork.com. You know, we've done a lot of things to help others here on the shows. We've done fundraisers for Paralympians and for the tornado victims there last year. And we just, we try and help out Net Posse and everybody that we can along the way. And it's rare that we have to ask for help for one of our own. But we certainly would appreciate any help that you can give for Tammy. She's a good kid, and she, as I said, she's had a really, really tough time of it over the past year with the head injury she had from the accident. It was one of those stupid things, again, with a drunk driver that we all hope never happens to anybody we know, but happens every day here in this country. So any help you can give would be appreciated. That is for certain. As far as schedule here, a couple more housekeeping items while Jennifer's getting our first guest on. We will be here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday of this week. And then next week, we are going to have shows for you every day like we normally do. Jamie and I have recorded some shows in advance here for you next week. So So we will have some best of it. On Monday, we'll have the all-hosts episode where all the hosts got together, and we do that every year, so you'll hear us all together having a good time. And then later in the week, we are going to have some musical episodes that Jamie and I recorded for you with some new musicians. So we're going to be adding to the music roster here on the show. So I think you're going to find that fun. We really had a good time recording those episodes. So I hope that you enjoy them and they'll be coming to you. And then we'll be back here live on the 2nd of January. So we have some fun stuff prepared for the holidays. Jennifer, you didn't have any luck?
Well, Bob is having a technical issue at his end, and I'm going to call him back in approximately 3 minutes.
Okay.
We can always count on technology to let us down, so we're going to do that. And in the meanwhile, we'll talk amongst ourselves.
Okay. Well, I have a snooze story here for you. I posted it on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning this morning. Did you watch the video of the Shetland pony on the train in Berlin?
I haven't yet, but it's getting lots of commentary, so it must be good.
Yeah, it's almost gotten a half a million views already. So it is a neat, it's a funny little video. You know, we had that lady, remember, we had that lady in Britain that was bringing his pony everywhere and made the news this past year. And we commented on that many times during the show this past year. Well, this time it's in Berlin. It was a girl who just got on the subway train with her little pony, a little Shetland pony. And the pony just walks up and stands there perfectly calm, you know, didn't really cause any commotion at all. Everybody in the train, you can tell, is glancing over but trying not to make a scene. So, you know, and I'm sure, you know, you're there in the morning and you just had your coffee on your way to work, and there this pony comes in the subway train. You know, they're obviously amused by it, and you can see some of them are using their mobile phones. Well, you know, that's what happened here. I think somebody did a video on their mobile phone, and we have that posted there. And it says it's thought that the pony may belong to a local circus group that collects charitable donations, so that she might have been out collecting charitable donations or whatever with it. But
you know she heard that story about the jingle pony collecting for the Salvation Army.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's what it was.
She thought she'd give it a try. Well, the train people, the people who run the train, I don't know which group it is there in Berlin, but they apparently aren't too happy about it. They said it does violate their rules. So you're not allowed to take dogs and cats and other things on the train. So
he's very mannerly, though. He probably causes less trouble than some of the people riders.
I'm sure he's not drunk. He's not throwing up in the corner, you know, all of that stuff.
He does look slightly sedated, though. He's pretty sleepy.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if he was, or he had a long day collecting money. I'm not sure which.
That might be it. He might have just had a long day jingling a little bell and raising funds for the local circus group.
Hey, you know what Wendy got to do, Wendy from the driving radio show, Dr. Ying? She got to this weekend, I have to hear about it today when we record the show, she got to go in a parade again. And you remember what it was like the last time we tried to go in a parade with Wendy.
Oh, dear. Is there going to be a headline that we're going to be embarrassed about?
I don't think so, and I'll tell you why. Last time, Wendy, when we lived in Lexington, Wendy said, let's go in the, what's that parade called in Georgetown? The Festival of the Horse. They have a Festival of the Horse every year in the fall in Georgetown, and they have a parade. It's all horses. So all the different horse groups get together, and, you know, it's pretty well attended. And it's kind of noisy because it actually goes through the fair with all the little amusements and everything. Kind of weird how they do that. But anyway, so she says, I'm going to do, was she doing three? Was it a three? Yes. Right? Two and one?
Yes, it was, because I remember we had to dink around a lot with the reins, yeah.
Yeah, so it was two horses in the back and one horse in the front. They have a name for that. I don't remember what it is. But so she said, oh, this will be fine. My horses are used to, you know, all kinds of commotion. She does combine driving with them, you know, going through the obstacles and all that stuff. Well, her lead horse, which one was it, Dante?
Yeah, Dante's
Dante was, when we got out to the main part, he was pretty good until we got out to the main part where the streets were lined with people. And By the way, you can go ahead and give them a call again when you're when you need to. When the streets were lined with people, it was Dante started getting a little agitated and you know starting to carry on a little bit.
There was a marching band in front of the poor thing.
That's right. There was a marching band about two up. And one thing you should not do at a parade with all horses is have the marching band right behind the horses, especially horses that aren't used to parades. I mean, the Rose Bowl parade is one thing. Those horses are approved and well-trained, and their parade broke. Well, Dante wasn't having any parts of it. He started rearing, and there's people on each side, and then you have to wait. You know, the other thing about parades is it's hurry up and wait. They move for 2 seconds, and then you stop. Well, he didn't like the stopping part, and he started rearing and stuff, so we had another helper on our carriage who jumped off there and was trying to control Dante while we were trying to keep the people from not getting too panicked. And that's the way it went for about two blocks with screaming children and people thinking they were going to get run over by this wild, crazy horse. And finally, we bailed out of the parade, took a side street. And then once he got moving, he was fine. But he was not going to make it the whole way through that parade. Well, this time, apparently, Wendy was in another parade out in California, but with a mini. So I told her on the phone the other day, I said, you know, if that mini acts up, you're fine. You're going to be absolutely fine if the mini acts up, because even a rearing mini probably won't scare children. So I can't wait to hear about how it went being with a mini in the carriage in the parade in California. So we'll hear more about that.
She's starting small.
Well, you know what? You know, minis aren't going to, even if they're acting up, they're not going to scare people like Dante was. So,
well,
I mean,
that's a bad thing.
We'll hear all about that on the Driving Radio Show this week. Well, our first guest is on the line. We have Bob Cashone, who is the executive director of the Intercollegiate Horse Show Association. And not only that, he was the co-founder many, many, many years ago. So we're going to say hi to Bob. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. How are you all?
Good. It's good to have you on. We've had we've done a segment on the IHSA for a long time now, once a month, getting updates on what's going on around the association and around all the schools. So it's good to have you on.
Well, thank you. And that's great. Happy to hear it.
Well, now, back in 1967, you were what, 18 years old? Where'd you go to school? It was in New Jersey, right?
Yes, Fairleigh Dickinson University. I went to the TNEC campus, about 10 miles from the George Washington Bridge.
Oh, gotcha. So you're up near New York then.
Right.
Well, now, you were a rider before then. Were you a rider before college? You'd always been?
I was a rider before college. I had the great fortune, because of neighbors and friends of mine, to ride with Victor Hugo Vidal just before he moved to California. And, I mean, it was great. It was fabulous. Then, actually, what happened was my parents came to me. I'm ready to go to college. I'm 17 and ready to go to college. My parents said, Bob, we can't afford four colleges and you to continue riding. I had an older brother in college. I had a younger brother and a younger sister right behind me.
Okay.
So they said, you have to make a choice. And I said, good. Horses. And Dad said, wrong choice. And I had to stop riding and I had to go to college cold turkey.
How many go through that each year, Bob?
Yeah, I understood. I wasn't happy. But it's okay. I went to Fairleigh Dickinson. There are no horses up in Teaneck, New Jersey. So I found five kids and formed a club. And I went 2 miles down the road to a little county park. The gentleman had 12 horses, an outdoor ring, and some trails. And I said, Johnny, I'm going to bring you these five riders. They're going to rent the horses from you for the hour and pay you. I'll instruct them for nothing. Will you give me a free horse for the hour? And he said, sure. So that kept me riding. All of a sudden, the word got out, Bob is giving free horseback riding lessons, and my club went to 40 members overnight. So that's when the school came to me and said, we're going to put this in a physical education credit as a one-credit course. Will you teach it? And I became the youngest faculty member ever at the history of the university while still in undergrad. And then they said, here's $200, run a horse show. We want to see what you're doing. So I called Jack Fritz down at the Madison campus, which was 40 miles south of me, in a beautiful, beautiful setting down there. and they were right near the United States Equestrian Team headquarters in Gladstone, and they had a club. And I said, Jack, come on up, but don't bring horses, just bring riders. And I'll rent these horses up here. We'll have all the riders pay an entry fee, including me. I was a rider. And we'll pick them out of a hat, beginner, intermediate, advanced. And the first show was, 45 or 50 kids, six classes in a little gymkhana. I put a story in the Chronicle of the Horse after that, a little four-inch story. Six colleges read it. They all called me up and said, Bob, would you have another show in the spring? We want to come. And I did, and they all came. And when they got there, I said, time out. Next year, you have a show, you have a show, you have a show, and I'll have a champion show. The IHSA was born, and I never looked back.
And you were 18 years old at this time?
That's correct.
Wow.
And you know, I wanted to create something for riders, no matter what their ability, from walk trot to Metal McClay. I didn't care. And I didn't care about their financial status either. You know, whether they could afford to ride or they had a very expensive horse. It didn't matter to me. I just wanted everyone to have that opportunity.
Well, I think, you know, I don't know, you obviously did this intentionally, but I don't know if you realized the result of it all this time later, that not having them transport their own horses was really what I think has really made this work over the years, too, not having that extra expense.
That's correct. That's a major expense. And another factor that took place in here was that I segregated the classes. It wasn't fair for a Metal McClay rider to ride against a walk trot rider. So in the beginning, we had four different classes or levels or divisions. Today we have eight, you know, and it works. And, I mean, obviously we're up to over 380 colleges now with over 9,000 riders in this country doing this every year in both the hunt seat discipline and the western discipline.
Do you have any statistics on how many of those riders go out and become professionals or, you know,
well,
continue?
Many, many go out and become professionals, but I will say this. On the hunt seat side, and we have the same qualifications on the western side, but on the hunt seat side, the top individual rider at the end of the year, they qualify into the Cachon Cup, which is the number one English rider in the country at a college level. So far, four riders, one in Virginia, one from Tufts University, one from University of Pennsylvania, one from UMass Amherst, they have all won the Cachon Cup while they were students in college, and they've all gone on to the Olympics. Beasy Patton Madden, Greg Best, Peter Weil, Mark Weisbecker, and they all rode in college in the intercollegiate. Well, we have the same caliber of riders on the western side. But many, many riders have gone into the horse industry. The Phipps sisters, Jimmy Faircloud, Kelly Mullins. I can go right down the list. We have a judge this year that's a former rider in the intercollegiate, Ann Cerberly. She's now married and stayed in the horse industry, and she's a big R judge today, and she's going to be one of the two judges on the hunt seat side judging the nationals for us. I mean, I think that's fabulous.
And you've had as many, on go to the other side of the spectrum, you've had as many kids coming into the program that really haven't done much with horses before until they got into college.
That's correct. When you could start at a walk-trot level or on the western side, a walk-jog level, and maybe you rode in a camp when you were 10 years old but had the desire but not the wherewithal, and now the opportunity has come to you again in a college setting, I mean, God, the walk trot canter and the lower divisions, you know, they keep growing and growing every year. And it's a great opportunity for these kids to learn not just let's learn what a diagonal is. They really get into barn management, stable management, the horse industry. And many of them go on after they graduate and are in the industry. They become riders. They become horseshoe people. They become... they own tack shops. I know one young rider. She manages Robert Dover's stable when he's on the road. What a nice job that is, all right? She went after she graduated and rode equitation all her life. She went into dressage, and now she's managing Robert Dover's stable on the road. That's terrific. Another young lady is riding for Beasy Patton Madden, doing her warm-ups of her horses before Beasy gets on them. She went to University of Kentucky.
That's a
Callie
pretty good
Shaw.
Gig.
You know, right, absolutely. I mean, they're out there every place I turn.
Well,
that
leads us to what Jennifer, you know, one of the things Jennifer wanted to us to get to when we were talking today is the Alumni Association, because that's something that not as many people are aware of. What is that? What's involved with that as far as the IHSA's Alumni Association?
As far as I know, in any college sport, once you graduate college, you're finished in that sport at a college level. In equestrian, because of the intercollegiate, we allow alumni to continue if they wish. However, if they graduate a college in the East Tier, they graduate Stony Brook or Fairfield University or something like that, and they move out west for a job or because they got married or whatever, as long as there is an alumni division in the region where they move to, they could ride there, still qualify for their school back east here and come to nationals. I mean, it's the only, you can't come back as a swimmer or a football player and say, hey, coach, remember me last year? Put me in. They'll laugh. You can't do that. But in riding, you can. And as you indicated, one of the key factors is they don't have to have their own horse and they don't van horses around the countryside.
So that works the same way then?
Yes, correct.
Now, is it special classes for the alumni, I assume?
Yes. Okay. They have a flat class and they have over fences class, and it's only for alumni riders. And then we have this comparable, we have a horsemanship and we have reining on the western side, only for alumni riders. That's correct.
Are there a lot that take advantage of it?
You know, it's funny. We graduate about 2,400 riders now. I think last year was 2,500 riders a year as seniors. And over 200 still ride in college on competitions. So about 200 a year ride.
Well, that's actually pretty good. Where do you see the association going in the future? What are your goals for the future of the association?
Well, in the immediate, I'm just so awed on what it has done over the years, stemming from the IHSA and this format now. There is a whole dressage group out there because there are riders that want to do that discipline, and we respect that. And Beth Buchema up at Johnson & Wales College in Rhode Island started a dressage group, and now there's 60 colleges with dressage out there. There's a whole group doing – it's really a three-day type format called the ANRCs, the Affiliated National Riding Commission, which Paul Cronin started at Sweetbriar College, and that's out there at a college level. There is now a saddle seat group. There's now the NCAA, which has stepped up for varsity riding, and there are two high school groups that have evolved from the IHSA using the IHSA format, which now becomes a great feeder program to all these other groups out there once they get to college. So it has really opened doors, and where do I see this going in the future? It's going to continue to grow like this. It's growing every year, and all of these groups are growing every year. So that tells you that the need was there, and the people that are involved with it, I mean, the Naomi Blumenthal's, the Peter Cashman's, the woman who used to be a rider and is now the coach of Stanford University, Vanessa Barish. I can go right around the country. Cindy Ford at Skidmore College. I can go right around the country. Mary Druding at St. Lawrence, who won the Collegiate Cup this year. Ollie and Debbie Griffith at Ohio State. There are two professionals in the Western world that 20 years ago, if you asked them, would you ever coach a collegiate team, they may laugh at you because they have a professional barn, a professional stable, and they teach students and they qualify all year long for Congress and the Worlds and everything else. Today, they're the winningest Western team in the country in a collegiate setting. And they still have their professional program going at their farm at the same time. I mean, So the people that have come in and embrace this and stay with this and nurture these young riders, there's part of your answer right there that's making this continue to be so successful and keep growing.
And, you know, with the high schools coming on board, too, you kind of have your own Pop Warner thing going on there.
Absolutely.
You
know, you're
developing
right.
them as they come up
yes.
through. I do think, actually, that you might see the biggest growth in there. You know, we talked last week about the Lexington Catholic in Lexington, Kentucky, you know, creating a four-year program for equestrian. So, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of growth in that area, and that's just terrific. You know, that's
yep.
where – and that'll bring more and more – you know, our goal here at the Horse Radio Network, as is yours, is to introduce horses and how wonderful they are to non-riders, to people who never rode before. So I think as we see more of those younger programs coming on board, too, your programs will just grow and grow and grow.
Right. Correct.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, that's terrific.
They flew me out in 1997 to help start that high school group, Roxanne Reinheimer, now Roxanne Lawrence, in the Andrews School in Willoughby, Ohio. And today they're pushing almost 7,000 riders. Now, they go down into the middle school, too, so they have a six-year window. It's the 4 years of high school but the 2 years of middle school. But still, it's exactly what you said. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, that can only help. Well, it's the IHSAInc.com. That's IHSAInc.com if you want to learn more about it. And we really appreciate you being on, Bob. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, it was great. Thank you. And
all
you
right,
have a great
care.
Day and a happy holiday to you all.
You too. Merry Christmas, Bob.
Thank you.
All right. We are sponsored this half hour by Omega Alpha Equine. You know, we all care about what we feed our horses, probably more than what we feed ourselves. Omega Alpha also cares about what goes into your horses and ponies. That is why Omega Alpha only uses natural formulations for enhancing equine health and performance. All of their products are made by them using the finest natural ingredients available. Dozens of different all-natural products are available to help your horses with all kinds of things, including coat, digestive tract, kidney and liver function, muscles and joints. Anti-flame is one of those products. Anti-flame alleviates pains and body aches and joints and the back and legs and feet. It can be used for both chronic and acute cases of pain. It acts as an anti-inflammatory in muscles, feet, and joints, and also relieves pain. And anti-flame encourages repair of damaged tissue as well. Plus, it supplies sulfur to the body, important for many biochemical reactions in the body. You can see all of their products, all of their natural products, at OmegaAlphaEquine.com or like them on Facebook by searching for Omega Alpha Equine. Well, Jennifer, our next guest is ready, I think, right?
Yes, he is. We're just on the fly this morning. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I am good.
Yes. Am I pronouncing your name correctly? Bolender?
Yes, it's Bolender. Correct.
Oh, I got it right. Yay me. We would like to welcome Mark this morning. He is the guy that is responsible for many of the extreme trail and mountain trail videos that we all love to watch on YouTube. And look at those things and goes, those people are crazy. And we searched the interweb and dug Mark out of the mountains. And we're going to have him come on this morning and tell us a little bit about extreme and mountain trail. But to get a little background, tell us a little bit about Mark. And did you grow up as a horse guy?
No, I actually did not grow up as a horse guy. I started riding when I was 39 years old, the same age as Sally
oh, wow.
Swift. I loved animals, but horses were not on my forte. I found them to be fairly rude and scary. They were beautiful, but I didn't understand them.
There's a lot of horse husbands that agree with you, Mark.
Yes.
What was it that spurred you to get into horses? Was it the classic case of a loved one said, you're going to get into horses or I'm not sticking around? Or how did that happen?
No, it was a little daughter named Kendra who said, Daddy, I want a horse. And one thing led to another, and we decided to do the family thing and all buy horses.
You're a brave man.
Looking back, indeed I was. Indeed I was.
So daughter's pony obsession morphed somehow into extreme trail and mountain trail. What happened there? That seems like a big leap.
It's a fun leap. It's a fun story. But what happened is almost right off after the first year I got it, I actually was bucked off of my horse and I broke my back. And that was about the same time that Christopher Reeves broke his. And that is quite sobering when you are in bed and can't move. And so I hired someone who now resides in Missouri, Steve Cornwell, who worked for me for 7 years. And his job was to train my two horses, teach me to ride, and go to a clinic and show every month around. And so we proceeded in a seven-year journey of great learning curve, and I was led a very active life of snow skiing and water skiing on circuit and racing sailboats and in the martial arts, and I always had a coach, and so it was pretty natural when I got in something new to hire a coach, and it was the best move I ever made because he did teach me balance, and along with all the other clinics and everything else, I learned a lot. I mean, it's a tremendous amount, and the more I've learned, the less I know. And so I started showing all around, and then in quarter horses, and then reining, and then someone kept telling me I needed to go see this show down at Oregon, and I went down and took my horse, and I was hooked. I didn't do the best the first year I went, 2006, and 2007 I came back, and then 2008, 9, and 10, I actually won the national high point down there, and I did it bridleless, actually, on my horse. And then I won the Open Futurity in 2008 with Checkers, or 2009, then 2010, I won the Open, too, on another horse that I was training, because this goes on my sixth year now that I'm a trainer. And so the learning curve, has been steep. It's been concentrated, but anything I get into, I jump in with both feet. And it takes a lot of study. It's a very humbling journey. It takes a lot of reading. And you have to be open to look to other people for instruction also. But the mountain trail is just a magical new discipline, and it is awesome for cross training. I don't care whether you're jumping. We have a mountain trail course now that's one of the best in the world, and that used to be my jumping arena. All my beautiful jumps are gone, and now it's all mountain trail.
So how did mountain trail get started as a competitive sport?
Well, Major DeFour, down at the Oregon Horse Center, he owns the Oregon Horse Center, and they host many large breed shows in different various shows. And he was looking at a trail class one day, and he said to himself, that is not a trail class. You know, I know the trail because he likes to ride the backcountry. And so he proceeded to build a trail course that looked like a mountain. And he has lots of equipment. He brought in like 200 tons of rock and made ponds and bridges. And it's as you've seen, it's a true trail course. And the sport grew, and it just expanded tremendously. And so most of the spinoffs that I can trace down across the U.S., Canada, and Europe, they all can be traced back to that show there at Eugene, Oregon, and the difficulty. But Major, he encourages me, but he really has no interest in expanding beyond his one show. And I see the beauty of it, and that's why we have taken it upon ourselves to, do our best to march this across the U.S., Canada, and Europe, and now probably Australia and South Africa.
So for the five people in our audience who have not seen any of the videos on YouTube, paint a little picture of what a mountain or extreme trail competition is. So you took a standardized trail class that you might see at an AQHA show, which is held in a flat groomed riding arena, and there are some ground poles and maybe a place to back up. What does extreme or mountain trail look like compared to that for somebody who's not seen the videos?
Well, extreme mountain trail looks almost, at the Nationals, looks almost like you've walked into the mountains. There's huge rocks, and they are genuine rocks that are brought in with large equipment. There's 40 and 50-foot trees. There's mounds of dirt up to 20 feet tall, laced with logs and rocks. There are numerous logs. We're not talking about little poles. We're talking about logs, up to 18 inches through. We're talking about ponds that are up to their bellies. At times you have logs floating in the ponds that you have to walk over. There's trenches that you have to ride through, and sometimes you have to duck, for there's logs above your head. There's bridges that you have to ride under, bridges you have to ride over. There's a waterfall that goes up about 20 feet, and it actually has a stream coming down it. I think they have 1,200 gallons a minute coming out, or 2,400 gallons a minute coming out. So it's quite the
does
stream.
It rain? Does they have a rain machine, too? That would be so cool to make it rain on you.
They don't have a rain machine, but the funnest thing is, at the last day of the show, you actually ride up and down the waterfall. It's a stream, but it's very steep, and it has rolling rocks, and you would think the horses can't do it, but those horses walk up and down that, the vast majority of them, without ever blinking an eye. And it's quite amazing what the horse can accomplish. But this trail course, and as you saw, there is one division, it's called the timed event, and so you are judged on your time, which is only 40% at times, and they change it. They're not real consistent there, and that's one thing that we want to do in the mountain trail, is to be very consistent in the judging. But then your techniques and the finesse, that is judged at 60%. So you might win the timed event, but unless it's determined that your skill was correct, then you might not win. But yeah, it's a fantastic course, but for the most part, it's all done at a walk and a trot.
Now, Mark, I just have a technical question for you. Are you using regular shoes, or are you putting Boreum on them to stop slipping, or what do you do?
No, you use a regular shoe just like you would go on a mountain trail ride. I've learned that if I take a rainer to make sure I pop off the sliders, put on regular shoes because
yeah, that'd be good.
There's often mud. Yeah, there's often mud. But no, you regular shoes work just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So you don't need anything for, you know, like in driving, we put Boreum on to keep it from slipping down the road and things. I didn't know with the rocks.
Yeah, actually, there is one section of the trail show that you walk down a 15-foot rock path, and they're all big rocks, just like on a real mountain trail. We actually train them here on our trail course. We have what we call a face and a wall. Each one's about a 10, 12-foot drop, and not quite vertical, but almost. And like yesterday at the clinic, you know, the horse is slick, yes, but they have to learn to slide down. And the practical application of that is here in the Pacific Northwest, it's often slick and wet and rainy, but you still go on a trail ride. Or if you're out on a cattle ranch rounding up some cattle and it rains, you don't turn around and go home because it's slick. So horses are actually trained to slide and control themselves. And most wrecks I've ever seen on the trail are when people panic and get in the way of what the horse can do.
Yeah, yeah.
I can see it now, Glenn. They're going to have the slalom for them next. Okay, everybody's getting too good at sliding straight down.
That's right.
The bank. We're going to have slalom next. This is kind of crazy, Mark. These courses, obviously, are a labor of love. There is some serious amount of dirt moving and construction going on. You have to really like playing with big toys. How are the courses changed up from show to show, and what kind of work is involved with that kind of thing? Because, like you said, these are real boulders and real trees.
Well, they set this course in Oregon up twice a year. And then in November, you have the National, and then you have the Northwest. And so the courses greatly change between the two shows. For 3 days, they bring in heavy equipment, and they reconstruct it, so it has a fresh look to it. The ponds are the same. The waterfall is the same. Various obstacles are added for technical difficulty, because to be really successful at this, too, you need a combination between a three-day event horse and dressage horse or quarter horse, trail horse. You have to have that boldness and confidence and forward movement, yet with the finesse. But these courses are a labor of love, and the ones that I have been building around the U.S., Canada, and Europe, most of them take, the initial work is done in 4 to 5 days, and then it will take them, you know, a few weeks here and there to finish landscaping it and to tweak it and finish it. But those courses, some of them are just literally spectacular. And it depends when we build a course, we try to fit it into what the local terrain looks like. The one we just completed this year down in New Mexico for Barbara Windham by Santa Fe, it blends right into the environment. And it looks just like part of the landscape, and it's landscape with, you know, desert type of material and fauna. It's right by the Rio Grande, and it's beautiful. And the one that we had, a couple we did down in Florida, helped design and build the one from Lynn Palmer at Ocala, and Lynn, her husband. And so
let me guess,
Mark,
in Ocala, we live in Ocala, so let me guess, the one in Ocala had palm trees, rattlesnakes, and banana spiders.
Not quite. Actually, we built that, I think, in 2008, and they'd had that hurricane or big windstorm the year before, so we were able to get a lot of stuff. But you can look on Lynn Palm's website and see hers. But then I built another just stunning one at Palm City for Jack Peoples down there. And that one looks like a mini putt-putt golf. It's all sodded.
Oh, cool.
Palm trees. He did bring in palm trees and everything else. And, yes, there are alligators right for the pond there. So, but in Florida, you know, they're worried about earthquakes, but they don't worry about the crocs. So us people up here in the Pacific Northwest, we think they're crazy.
So Mark,
I do have a question here, Jennifer. So you said about the athleticism of the horses, you know, needing a three-day event horse and a dressage horse, and, you know, definitely a steady Eddie. What are you using mostly? Or is it mostly quarter horses, or are there other breeds popping in there?
Oh, we see absolutely everything. Size or shape is totally irrelevant to this. We have horses that are 18-2 that do this, and we have little ponies that do this. The critical thing is the mind, and the next critical thing is the mind of the person. I have more work to do to change people's concepts and allow the horse to do what it can naturally do, what its instinct will take over to do, and that always shocks people. But, no, we have a lot of warm bloods, actually, that do this, too. We did a clinic for Claudia Kojikar, who has some tremendous trainers and jumpers in Canada and the U.S., and a lot of those jumpers have fire in their belly, especially if they're jumping 6 and 7 feet, trust me. And they're large. But we have found out that if you don't insult the horse and you get into their mind, those little horses, they drop their little nose in the ground and they pick their way through those rock patches and through the logs just fine. And we have pictures, you know, to prove it. So, no, the breed is irrelevant. Yes, the Quarter Horse Association calls it trail challenges. And so we're hosting 6 AQH shows here at our horse park this year. In our courses around the world, we're also pushing the AQHA Trail Challenge, but that is also open to all breeds on that day. And so the most critical thing to success in this discipline is proper training. If it's done proper, it's very safe. On an average, for instance, it takes about 20 minutes to teach a horse to walk across a 33-foot balance beam, or about 10 minutes to teach them to walk across the swinging bridge plus do a 180 on it. And it doesn't really matter what temperament they have. And I like the ones with an attitude, a little bold and confident, and I don't mind that at all. I find that's very beneficial to this discipline. But they all have to learn to, you know, pace themselves and wisely pick their way through the obstacles and not rush. And so I may have, if I'm judging, I may have a 17-2 hand horse that really is moving through the obstacles, but with total grace and with total control and with thinking its way through. And I may have a next little horse, 14-2, that takes twice the amount of time to get through it, and yet they're both correct. Or I may have a little horse that is rushing through it. It navigates that obstacle in the same amount of time as a large horse does, but it's rushing, so it will be scored very poorly. And so we really don't care what speed, as long as it's correct, as long as it's safe.
Okay, so it is a judged as opposed to a speed competition.
Yes, it is a judged. Okay. Speed is more of the Yahoo Craig Cameron stuff, and I've also participated in that, where that's a little more cowboyism, I would say, and it's fun. But this here is very distinct on the finesse and judging. It's very objectively judged. For instance, when you go into that obstacle, you either enter straight or you do not. You either break gate or you do not. You either go off center or you do not. So it's not subjectively judged. It's very, very objective. If you stumble, if you step out. So it's like reining. We know precisely. Even riders know how you're judged. So it's not a beauty contest. It's not who you are. It's what the horse did.
Well, that's fascinating.
Go ahead, Jim.
My final question for you, Mark, because we're running short on time here. I could go all day on this, and now I'm going to have to make a trip to Oregon. If somebody's interested in getting started in this, are there different levels because it's obviously going to be one course, because you can't very well build these massive courses that are of natural terrain. You can't have one for each level like you would in a three-phase event where you have little jumps, medium jumps, and big jumps for three separate courses. How is that divided into levels for somebody who's a 9-year-old kid on a Shetland pony versus a professional trainer on a reining horse? How do the levels work in extreme
training? Well, we actually have three different levels plus the children's event within this too. And if you look on the AQHA website, you'll see we have level 1, 2, and 3. And so each course I design, you do want to be able to accommodate each level. Like on a large eventing field, you have different size jumps and different difficulty levels. And so the beginning jumpers, obviously, they're not going to go for the Grand Prix type jumps. And the same thing here, too, where the horses walk up and down in water on the courses we build, we will have different patterns for each level and different obstacles they master. For instance, the 33-foot balance beam, the only people that get to ride across that at our place are the open and the level 3 people. The other people, no, absolutely not. They might get to walk across a little low, you know, 12 or 14-foot balance beam. That's fine. It's not going to hurt if they fall off. But only the top people. So in each course, you have three distinct patterns and three distinct levels plus the children's pattern. So, yeah, there is something for everything. And then at the big AQHA regional quarter horse shows that I judge and do clinics for, you know, we set up many obstacles. We don't have a trail course. So you don't have to have one of these magical trail courses to get involved in mountain trail. Yes, that's nice. Yes, it's always wonderful to go and have that experience, but you don't have to have it. You know, I encourage all of you to go over to Lynn's Palms and Cyril's and see what they have and participate and look at her website. You're down in Florida and then down at Palm City. But no, you don't have to do all the very tough things if you're just starting. And you can go from there. And this is open to English riders and Western riders. And that's the beauty of this. All ages, all disciplines, whether you're Western or English, and that's what we see hooking people. It's fun.
So all of our listeners right now who are sitting there typing furiously into Google trying to find more on this and stopping by YouTube to watch videos, where is the best place for our listeners to go to find out more and to become involved with this this really cool discipline?
I would say go to our website, BollenderHorsePark.com, BollenderHorsePark.com, or you can look at our Facebook or LinkedIn. There is not association right now. We're working on that as we speak to get that started across the international lines. It will not only be for the U.S., it will be for Canada and also Germany. Germany, we have a large following. They've started an association over there now, and we're working with them, and that's exciting, and we have more courses to build over there. But, yeah, go to our website or feel free to give me a call at 360-269-5699. Or you can also call my marketing manager, Lee Sampson, at 360-269-6156. And she's actually from Florida. She was from Palm City, and she'd always ridden English and jumpers, and she was fascinated and hooked on what she saw in this. And it's fun, and it's good for the horses. So, yeah, go to our website or give us a call. We're always happy to talk. Just remember, we're 3 hours behind you.
Yeah, West Coast time, people. Well, thank you so much, Mark, for stopping by and spending some time with us this morning before the sun came up in your part of the country. And this has been a fascinating conversation, and I'm sure that lots of our listeners are going to go out and check out Extreme Trail and become involved. And hopefully we'll be hearing from you again soon to tell us all about the Extreme and Mountain Trail Association that's going to be starting here in America.
Okay, thank you so very much. And
thank you, Mark.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Well, that was fascinating.
Okay,
I could see you doing
that,
Jennifer.
I have one question. How far away is Palm City?
I know. Well, you know, I can tell you, I can call Lynn and you can go over and do her course in about 10 minutes. So No problem there. I could see you doing this. I could see you really getting into this, especially after your trail ride at the Greenway the other day.
Oh, you know me. The steeper the hill and the deeper the water, the better. You know me.
And Beaker would love it. He loves that stuff. So you too.
Oh, gotcha.
Is it better to have a bolder horse than rider, or is it better to have the rider be bolder than the horse? There's a good question we didn't get to ask Mark. We'll have to find that out. But we're going to take a break now for our song. A little bit, speaking of cowboys here, I have Bren Hill today. You have not heard this one yet on Horses in the Morning. It's called Christmas for Cowboys. And you can find all of his music at BrenHill.com. And we're going to have that song in just a second after this word from ProMat.
Hey folks, Coach Jen here from the Horse Tip Daily Show. All of us as horsemen mull over our horses' nutrition and stress out over their stress level and fret about their fitness. But when is the last time you puzzled over your horse's lounging and sleeping comfort? Research has shown us over and over that quantity as well as quality of rest and sleep are crucial for top athletic performance as well as overall well-being. Enter Stable Comfort by ProMat. Astute horsemen everywhere have been trusting Stable Comfort by ProMat to provide unsurpassed comfort for their equine charges, as well as an efficient and economical stall flooring system that saves them both labor and bedding dollars. Still not sure? Well, here's what one of Stable Comfort by ProMat's customers has to say. When I built my first custom stables slightly more than 8 years ago, one of my greatest concerns was the stall mat selection. Frankly, I would rather have no stall mats than mats that constantly shift, tripping horses and requiring extra shavings to hide the problems in an attempt to make horses comfortable. And most of all, I dreaded the burden of having to move heavy mats and repack stall foundations. Mission accomplished, thanks to ProMat for delivering an excellent product. The horses love it because it is comfortable. I love it because it looks perfect, even after 8 years. We bed the stalls only as needed and use far less shavings than I ever could have had imagined. And it takes less time to clean the stalls when using less bedding. And that's from Ann Dewarge of Little Rock, Arkansas. But the accolades don't stop there. Head on over to StableComfort.com and find out why champions like Nick Skelton, Mary King, and Chris Cox use Stable Comfort by ProMat systems for their equine athletes.
All in the saddle, we spend Christmas Day driving cattle over snow-covered plains. All of the good gifts are given today. Ours is the sky, the wide open plains. Fire for warmth, we stop for the night. Stars overhead, our Christmas tree lights. The wind sings a hymn as we bow down to pray. Christmas for cowboys and wide open plains. In the city, we have different ways, football and eggnog and Christmas parade. I'll take the blanket, I'll take the rain. Christmas for cowboys and wide open plains. Snow-covered plains, all of the good gifts.
and the wide open plain.
Wow, that was Bren Hill called Christmas for Cowboys. Bren is going to be on the December the 28th musical episode. We're going to be doing a little cowboy talk and talking all about his music. You are listening to Horses in the Morning, brought to you today by Omega Alpha Equine. I am Glenn the Geek here with Coach Jen. Jamie is off today. She, her husband wanted to take her away for a couple days, so I said that'll be terrific, and she'll be back on Wednesday and Friday of this week. Don't forget, Really Bad Ads on Friday. Well, we, every Monday at about this time, we have on with us Leslie Wiley from HorseNation.com. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
My goal for next year, Leslie, for which isn't far away, is it? My goal for next year is to put together a really embarrassing bumper for your segment. That's my goal.
I will look forward to that.
Yeah, you should. Hey, speaking of embarrassing, so I follow Leslie on Facebook. Before we get into the serious stuff, I follow Leslie on Facebook, and then all of a sudden, coming across my wall the other day was the picture, and it says my new party trick. And it's a picture of a half-dressed Leslie upside down in a handstand with one hand. My God, girl, I didn't realize you were that thick.
I am the upside-down queen of the world. Like, I really like being upside down for some reason. Like, I do handstands every day. I'm forever doing cartwheels. Like, I'm always challenging my friends at the barn to handstand contests in the barn aisle. So,
why didn't you get into vaulting? You should have been in vaulting.
I know. I missed my calling, apparently.
You do it on a horse. Jeez, Leslie. And then, I assume, were you a cheerleader?
I actually wasn't a cheerleader. I get asked that all the time.
Well, then if you weren't a cheerleader, I'm seeing there's another picture of you hanging upside down on a rope. So I figured if you weren't a cheerleader, you were probably a pole dancer at some point.
No, you know, I've never been a stripper, but however, I did take pole dancing lessons once with another girl from the barn, it's kind of a fitness craze right now. It's not just for strippers anymore. It is amazing workout for your upper body and your core. Which I need a lot of upper body strength to prevent my horse from running away with me cross country. So it was a fun way to get stronger. I like to lift weights too, but I'm always into doing different things. I took trapeze lessons last year, which was super fun and also involved lots of hanging upside down. Yep.
You sleep at the opposite end of the bed from your husband? I mean, are you hanging out there upside down? Well, we won't get into that. Well, let's get on to the topics at hand today. Of course, we have you on every week. And today we thought we would do something a little bit different in that we have not gone over. It's that time of year when the USEF, the United States Equestrian Federation, does their Horse and Rider of the Year candidates, and you did a little article on the Horse of the Year candidates. So why don't you go over who the candidates are for Horse of the Year and just tell us a Reader's Digest version about each one, and then I'll do the Rider of the Year.
Super. The USEF Horse of the Year awards are just such a big deal. Over the years, last year, I think Neville Bardos Boyd Martin's Eventing Horse won. The year before that, it was a Reigning Horse, Gunner Special Night. And then before that, we had the Dressage Horse Ravel. And, you know, I think Theodore O'Connor won it 1 year. And the Show Jumper Authentic and the Dressage Horse Brentina. So sort of it's a long, long line of pretty legendary horses, and it's a neat way to honor them. And also, it's really one of the really fun aspects of it is that it's voter determined. So people can go on the USPF website and vote for the horse that they think is most deserving of the honor.
Very good. Well, who do we have this year?
So this year, there's two categories. There's an international category and a national category. So I can kind of give you a rundown of each of the three horses represented in both categories. And for the international horse of the year, we've got the candidates are Flexible, who Rich Fellers rode this year and won the Rolex FEI World Cup Jumping Championships at the beginning of the year, and it sort of held the show jumping team together at the Olympic Games in London. They were a highest placing American pair. And if you've ever seen a video of Flexible jumping, he's just phenomenal. He's small. He's a 15 three-hand stallion, but he just jumps around like a little cat. It's just pretty amazing to watch. So he's definitely deserving of the nomination. Moving on, we've got the eventer Manoir de Carnival, who was ridden is ridden by Sinead Halpin, and just took the Eventing World by storm this year. They were on the short list for the Olympics, just barely missed representing the U.S. in the games. I think they had a little nosebleed issue right beforehand, but they stayed in England and ended up placing second in at Burley. They're just a phenomenal partnership, and certainly have an exciting future in front of them. And you know, Sinead is a fairly young rider, and it's just exciting to see where they go from here. And let's see. And then the third candidate is NTEC Richter Scale, who was ridden by Jonathan Wentz at the Olympics this year. They came really close to medaling. I think they finished fourth in the individual and fifth in the freestyle. And, you know, this is a really touching story because, as you know, Jonathan passed away not too long after the Paralympic Games. And really, you know, this horse helped him achieve his dream of representing the U.S. at the Olympics, you know, at the Olympics, the Paralympics. And so that's just a really, I think it's another really special partnership and a really special horse. So that wraps up the international horse of the year category. And then we have the national horse of the year nominees. We've got C.H. Courageous Lord, who's an American saddlebred. I don't keep up with the saddlebred world as much, but this horse, I was looking at his competition record, and it looks like he's just phenomenal.
Pretty much you can say he won everything. He just won everything.
Won everything, specifically.
He's a five-gated, he's five-gated, and, you know, he just won everything this year. That's pretty much what you can say about this horse. This is great.
And then we've got this gorgeous black Frisian stallion named Harem, who also won everything this year. It's one thing that's really interesting about him is that he's well-rounded. He competes very successfully in saddle seat and also in show pleasure driving. But he is just gorgeous. I will be, they've got to make a Briar Horse model after after this Frisian. Because
and you know what? He's a gelding, too.
He's a gelding. He's a gelding.
Yeah.
A gelding. You're correct.
On a stallion, so, you know, they're probably kicking themselves now. They got this, you know, this champion who's a gelding. Well, can't put it back.
And then the third candidate is Jersey Boy, who has competed this year by Jennifer Alfano. And he has won, just won about every International Hunter Derby championship that there was this year. And if you've ever seen him compete or seen a video of him competing, it's just beautiful. They just put in these seamless. You know, I'm always I have so much respect for hunters because. They just make everything look so easy, and they come, you know, especially the big hunters, the working hunters, and the horses doing the Hunter Derby classes, you know, they're just cantering around in this beautiful, slow rhythm, and then they just canter up and rock back and lift over these great big fences, and it just is poetry to watch, and Jersey Boy just dominated the Hunter Derbies this year. So it'll be really interesting. I think all six of these horses are just phenomenal and absolutely deserving of becoming Horse of the Year. So it's now up to us to decide who wins, and you can vote on the USCF website.
Now, do you have to be a member?
I don't have to be. Maybe.
Yeah, I think you do. I think actually you do have to be a member because they ask for your member number when you go to vote.
Oh, yes.
So I think you do have to be a member of the USCF to do it. But regardless, the nominees for the Equestrian of the Year, first couple you actually talked about, Rich Fellers, who has Flexible, that horse you talked about, who was the first on the list there, who did some incredible things this year. And then Jonathan Wentz, who you also talked about from Texas, so the para-equestrian, and we've talked about Jonathan a good bit here on the Horse Radio Network. And, you know, he would win this posthumously, obviously. Gilbert Gibb Marcucci, who is in the world of the Hackneys. And he's been doing Hackneys and training and breeding Hackneys since 1960. And in 2012, he won the Hackney Pony Stakes and the Hackney Pony World Grand Championships in Kentucky. And, of course, I have a little bit of a soft spot for Hackneys because I owned a crazy one in my life. Drove me into a ditch a few times. And then Jennifer Alfano, it was like driving a Ferrari, though, let me tell you. That was the funnest horse to drive. Jennifer would not go in the cart with me, Leslie. She just wouldn't go in the cart. Because that horse was like driving a Ferrari. It was just, there was one speed, go, you know, and fast. Jennifer Alfano of Buffalo, New York, in the Hunter world, he rode Jersey Boy. So Alfano dominated the USHJA International Hunter Derby Circuit for the past 4 years. And this year, the pair earned top honors at the Derby Finals. So, you know, Jennifer's always been in the running for this. Matt Seaman of the Arabian world, his father Chuck was a mentor and a teacher, and he's made his mark in the Arabian Horse Show arena. He rode a horse called Rendezvous into the history books this year, winning the Purebred Arabian Park Horse Championship in both Canada and the United States. Joe Resser, also of the Arabian world, and is a rider and trainer for many years, and he earned 5 national championships this year, 1 reserve national championships, and 5 national top 10 finishes, and the U.S. and Canadian nationals, along with numerous regional titles. He just doesn't have room to put all his trophies anymore, probably just throws them out when he gets them. Bruce Griffin of Gretna, Virginia, is of the Frisian world, and really has made waves in that world, and this year earned many top finishes with Bruce's Frisians, and are well known in the Frisian world, and some beautiful, beautiful horses. And then finally, Wendy Potts of Mansfield, Texas, again on the Arabian side, dominated the Arabian and Half Arabian Hunter Pleasure and Show Hack divisions for decades. And get this, Leslie, 150 national and reserve champion titles. Now, that's a title hog right there. That's somebody who just let somebody else in. I mean, you know, didn't you know that kid in school that wanted to win everything? And nobody else could win because that kid was too smart or too good. Well, that's what Wendy is. So that's who your candidates are for this year. And what I do like about the USEF, especially, you know, with the equestrian and the rider nominees, is they do cross all disciplines. They're not just eventers. They're not just dressage riders. I mean, the USEF covers all the disciplines, including the gated and everything else. So they do include those, which I'm always happy to see.
Right.
And then you have been doing some crazy stuff over there at Horse Nation.
Always. And
there seems to be a theme right now, though.
Oh, yeah. We've got the Horse Nation Christmas extravaganza gearing up. So let's see. We have had, I was looking past over the past week, we've got horses made of ice, horses made of snow, horses singing We Wish You a Merry Christmas, horses dashing through the snow, holiday spirited stables, sexy horsey boyfriends and Santa hats, Christmas shopping ideas.
I have a complaint, though. You did one of your Friday flicks was Sexy Santa Edition. And in the Sexy Santa Edition, we see a lot of guys, well-built guys, well, maybe not all well-built, but a lot of guys in Santa hats, you know, half-naked. Now, my complaint... Now, wait a minute.
We included one in there just for you.
And then there's like 10 guys and one girl. So I'm thinking that there should be another post that really focuses on the girls here. I'm just saying.
Just saying.
That's my complaint here.
Well, you know, I think that's a good
what, 99% women is the reason that you did that.
That's correct. Maybe for your Facebook page, the Horse Hardcore Substance. Maybe that would be a good project for you.
I'll have to do a Santa Girl of the Day from now until Christmas. That's a good idea. I think I'll do that. By the way, you can find that. Just search for Horse Husbands Unite on Facebook.
That sounds like some fun research for you.
I'll take pride in that today. That ought to kill 2 hours. So definitely, are you going to be continuing the holiday theme all the way through this week?
Oh, absolutely. We are so excited about Christmas, and we're feeling the holiday spirit. So, yeah, so lots more holiday-themed festivities coming up on Horse Nation.
And then we won't be talking to you now for a couple of weeks. I wanted to mention, by the way, I did like you had another post in there before we say goodbye to you. I really, really like the post that you did, the 10 photos of horses dashing through the snow. They're really cool pictures in there. Really cool.
Yeah.
That's the Frisian with the, I don't know what the white horse was, but there was a white and a black horse, both look like Frisian types running through the snow. What an incredible picture.
Yeah, you could put a whole calendar, make a whole calendar. They all look like calendar pictures. They're just gorgeous.
They do. Yeah, they do. And then right beside them, you could put the half-naked guys, and you'd have a really calendar that would sell to every horsewoman because it has horses and the guys in one calendar.
Whoa.
And then the next calendar is going to be Leslie posing upside down. You could do a whole calendar with your upside-down poses on.
Nobody wants to see that, though. Nobody.
Thank you so much, Leslie, for joining us every Monday here this year. It's been terrific. We've had a lot of fun. We look forward to Mondays when you come on and lighten the mood a little bit. Will you join us now next week and the following? Will be the day before the holidays. So we'll see you again in a couple of weeks. You're going to come back next year?
Absolutely. I have so much fun every week, and we just are really thankful that you guys have us on.
Well, all right, terrific. Then you have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you in 2013.
Fantastic. Have a good one yourself.
All right, bye, Leslie. Well, Jennifer, we have a couple of other news stories here before we wrap up the day, a couple quick ones. One was Shania Twain. Remember we talked about Shania Twain a couple of weeks ago, and Jamie talked about the fact that she spent, a week at Shania's house, was it, hanging out with
Shania. That's right. She was celebrity stalking, yes.
Yes, and actually got to hang out and live at her house for a week. Well, Shania did open her Las Vegas show, and convenient that it was open during the NFR to the National Finals Rodeo. And apparently, according to Billboard magazine, there were a lot of cowboy hats and cowboy boots and belt buckles in the audience. Well, she apparently is putting on quite a show. It is this reviewer from Billboard magazine was very impressed. And her producer of the show explained she knew she wanted to have live horses. She knew that even though horses were going to be trained, she didn't want them doing tricks. She wanted them just to be appreciated for their natural beauty. It was more important for them to be seen in a natural way and for their interaction between her and the horses to be seamless and not based on, you know, them bowing and, you know, doing all kinds of things. So apparently it's just a very natural way that they're brought in. There are two horses, real live horses, that are brought into the show. And she did like 17, 18 songs, I think. And it says there in the review, after a rousing round of campfire songs and a spin during our show by rodeo attendee fans, so apparently she got one of the rodeo attendee fans on stage, Twain rushed off only to return with her second and most important horse of the night. Her producer goes on to explain she definitely knew she wanted a white horse in the show. The white horse was a big moment in the show, the centerpiece for the show, and it was symbolic of the rebirth and re-energized person that has made her way back to the stage, because she has been off stage for a very long time. And apparently she sings, the reviewer says, Twain's moment with this horse is worth the price of admission alone, as she sings Still the One to him on center stage, leaving the crowd in awe of both the song and the horse that somehow manages to be perfectly trained and perfectly natural all at once. And then she followed it from this moment on with her standing there. So it's actually a show that I would love to see. I think she would be terrific in this venue, you know, where they had time to produce it. It's going to be in one location, and, you know, it won't be moving around Vegas. It's going to be all in that same spot. So they really can do a good job. It's at Caesar's Palace Coliseum, which, of course, has hosted some of the biggest names in the music world. So
interesting.
Yep.
Now, there's more stuff to do. That's the problem with this show.
I know.
We do this research so we can bring these great news stories to our listeners, and that's just more stuff we have to do.
Well, one more quick little story, because I'll forget to do it on Wednesday, is that two cheetahs from the Houston Zoo that are usually, you know, cheetahs are usually found in cages and they have a little bit of an enclosure, but they really can't stretch their legs at all. And as we know, cheetahs are very fast. They like to roam and they like to run. Well, apparently in the off season of Sam Houston Race Park in Houston, the racetrack down there, they allow the zoo people to bring the cheetahs in to, they have an area on the infield that's completely fenced, and they allow them to bring the cheetahs in to run in the infield. Now, I would hate to be one of the horses. Cheetahs would be natural predators to a horse or a zebra. I would hate to be one of the horses sitting around, you know, watching all of this happen. There'd be a little nervousness there. But apparently they do this in the off season, and they let them off the leash, and they get to go run around and stretch their legs at the Sam Houston Race Park. Now, they said races
start.
So
it's a cheetah park. You have a dog park and a cheetah park.
And a cheetah park, that's right. And they don't put the dogs out with cheetahs. That's never good. But the races start next week. Horse racing comes back next week to Sam Houston, so the cheetahs are not going to be able to come out and play. But that's just kind of neat that they get to do that. It'd be fun to watch them, wouldn't it? I know we have fun watching our greyhound tear around. It would be fun to watch the cheetahs tear around. Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for filling in for Jamie. Jamie will be back on Wednesday and Friday of this week. We'll have our last Really Bad Ads of 2012 on Friday. Get your entries in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We have some of those great Hydra T hose nozzles for you this week, as well as we're going to clean the shelves and send out whatever crap we have left here and try and get Jennifer's office cleaned out for the new year. She's the one that has to collect all the crap that comes in all year long. So
it's time to clean out the swag box.
So who knows? We'll be giving it to more than one person. We do know that. More than one person's going to get stuff. So send in your ads. Get them in this week. Get the funny ones in. Get the fun ones in. And we'll play them on Friday. Thank you again. And have a terrific day, everybody. Remember, what's Jamie always say? Stay in your health. And go out and ride your horse to the mountain. That's real right.